Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I know that you both know the drill here. You get 15 minutes if you choose to use it with 5 minutes for rebuttal. And state your name when you begin your argument for the record. Thank you. Are you ready to proceed?
Thank you, Thank you. Michael Hager on behalf of Mr. Thomas Weber. And Mr. Weber is at Moose Lake. He's been there over 10 years. He's 49 years old now. And this appeal mainly addresses the transfer issue that had been supported both by the Special Review Board. The commissioner had appealed from the determination of the Special Review Board to recommendation. And then the independent examiner, Dr. Gearock, found that Mr. Weber had put in the work and was sufficient to go to community preparation services.
I want to circle back to something you said, because I know that the briefing did focus on the transfer issue.
Yeah.
But it seems that you also appealed the discharge issue.
Yes, we didn't waive that. We just felt that, Mr. Weber is quite despairing at this point of moving forward ever, but I wasn't going to give up that the other two prongs.
I just wanted to make sure so that we address it in our opinion.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you. So when we looked at the decision, we didn't bring up constitutional issues below. It was a hard-fought case. But then in looking at the decision and stepping back at the whole situation, we felt that the credibility determinations could be challenged as to the institution. And how I think about this is if there have been maybe, I'll charitably say maybe 7 people have ever succeeded in this program out of the 700 that are there. And if the University of Minnesota had a 1% success rate over the last 25 years, the legislature would have said something about this, what is happening. But the legislature doesn't seem to pay any attention to the failure rate. And Mr. Weber presents as a seasoned, treated individual. He participates. He's been there 10 years. And why we think the court, if the legislature is not going to pay attention, why we think the court might pay attention is that the court, back in the Linehan case that we cited, said this is a 32-month program. They pinned it down to a timing factor that you could have an idea, a rough idea of how long is this going to take. And under the Jackson versus Indiana case, we know that duration does matter. But what has happened since those early days of the program is that we've gone from how long does it take to how many phases can you get through? And phases have no time limit. And so we think that saying that Mr. Weber is still in phase 2, he has to get to phase 3, okay, well, it's taken him 10 years to get to the middle of phase 2, does that mean we have a reasonable expectation it'll be another 10 years to get to the end of phase 3?
I want to circle back to something you said earlier. So you talked about the credibility.
Yes.
And are you disputing any of the factual findings made by the panel?
I'm not. We didn't bring that up. I rely on Dr. Gearock. I mean,
and so when you say credibility, you're talking about the measurable efficacy by the number of people who graduate from the program. Is that what you mean by credibility of the program?
That when Dr. Tippett, and Peter Puffer, when they speak, they're speaking from a particular institutional viewpoint that is not directed to the real world of how much time is happening here. They're directed from phases. Where are they in the phase? And I think Dr. Gerach was not necessarily encumbered by that. He was just looking at Weber. He's looking at his treatment and said, CPS works for him. I think the SRB did that. So I'm just, the point that we made in our brief is that there's some kind of institutional mindset that does not deserve a presumption of competency.
I understand now.
Yeah.
Counsel, the experts, and I'm talking about Puffer and Tippett, pointed to some deficiency in your client's participation in phase two. So it isn't just phase two lasts X number of months. It is there are certain things you have to accomplish, and specifically, I see, for example, in finding 47 of the panel, they said petitioner continues to have remaining treatment needs in the areas of self-monitoring, thinking errors, and sexuality. So they're pointing to some specific items that they feel your client needs to address. So how do we, as a error-correcting appellate court, second-guess the panel's acceptance of Tippett and Puffer's conclusions?
That's right, and if you're reviewing for clear error, obviously that's a real challenge to find clear error there. I think Dr. Gerach looks at the very same facts and said, well, that's why you have CPS, to deal with those issues. In fact, even out on provisional discharge, they're going to be dealing with issues. Until there's a final discharge saying there's no more treatment necessary, you deal with those issues. And this comes up time and again in the judicial appeal panel, where an independent, well, not time and again, but certainly in my experience, an independent examiner will say, that's right. They failed a polygraph. Polygraphs are clinical tools to assist with treatment. Treatment happens at CPS. CPS uses polygraphs for treatment. It's a clinical tool, and there's no question that they could continue to do this in CPS. So to say that the very same factors that the institution says, well, prevent him from moving forward. An independent examiner could say, well, he should do that while moving forward because treatment milieu is a major component of treatment. And that's what Gerach was saying. He needs to be with more advanced people in a milieu where he can advance, which goes to our main argument, which is this is a system designed to prevent treatment. He prevent access to treatment. They have a bottleneck, and they're justifying it by giving these. Now, here are these specific facts, but how do you weigh those facts? We're saying the judicial appeal panel needs to apply a bit more scrutiny. We think that scrutiny of the program itself is part and parcel of the periodic review process.
Although Dr. Gerach did say that it was a close call.
Absolutely. But he erred on the side of Mr. Weber is safe to go. I mean, on those conditions, the five conditions, he thought Mr. Weber benefits, everybody benefits by him getting more close to transition programming. And I think for all 700 of the people that are in this program, they need to be moved and given what is possible to give them. Now, there's an argument that, well, they'll get the minimum acceptable treatment, but we're saying, well, just for Weber, we think it's minimal acceptable that he be in a reduced custody at this point. And that the judicial appeal panel needs to intervene the way the special review board did and not accept, at least in this case, the viewpoint of the institution. And I think there's good grounds for not accepting the viewpoint of the institution because they have zero track record in the program that they're providing right now. Weber's been through several different iterations of sex offender treatment. He's been there 10 years. He's a veteran of several different forms. His behavior in treatment is used as a stick against him. But after 10 years in a program that at best works in 32 months, there's a certain treatment burnout, but he is not burned out. He's one of the more exceptional ones.
I want to make sure that I understand your argument in your reply brief.
Yeah.
It was a little confusing to me.
Yeah, sorry.
And no, it's probably me. Length of time is not one of the factors that the court considers under the statute, and yet that seems to be part of your argument. So if you could just help me to understand your reply brief.
Please. Well, I think we pin our due process towards two of the prongs, clinical progress and present treatment needs, and then which facility can best meet treatment needs. I think Dr. Gurak said yes as to both. And then we're saying you have to look at the program that Mr. Weber's been able to progress in. It's not meeting his treatment needs at this point. Are treatment needs reviewable in the judicial appeal panel? We're saying yes. That's our argument. Is this is a long tradition in this court, and we cite the Travis case. The Travis case cited numerous cases, stating that strict scrutiny was the standard, and quoting Professor Janice's article that I'm saying periodic review does include review of what kind of treatment they're getting, if that makes sense, at least under those two prongs. So there is a real problem here. The legislature's not going to address it. There's a problem that treatment, how a treatment happens, how efficacious is it after 5-6 years? That whole problem now comes up where they're saying to the court, the Supreme Court in Linehan, it's a 32-month program, and you've got people there with no reasonable expectation of ever being released. That is just decoupled from any kind of timing factor. And it's been done because of this phase process. It's now coupled to phase one, phase two, phase three. And then everything in that institutional measurement has to do with these minutiae of where you are at in phase two or phase three. And I don't think they're looking at the overall, is this person capable of doing well in CPS? But, you know, who knows? Maybe half the people in the program, maybe 300 people could do well at CPS, possibly. But they're never going to have a chance at that, possibly because of funding. But we just think the system's broken. And with Weber, I think he's a case of where it's taken way too long for him. He's an intelligent person. He went to college. He's intelligent. He's cooperative. I think this is the first time I've had him as a client for 10 years. I think this is the first time he ever went to the SRB, where it occurred to him to do it. And people who got to know him and meet him knew this is somebody you could trust. I know trust is a very important part of this process, whether the clinicians can trust the patient, whether the patient can trust the clinicians. And it's a very delicate process, and I think Dr. Gurak was saying, you know, get him into a milieu with people that are at his level. He's not at his level right now, and that's where the treatment is failing him.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes if you choose to use it in rebuttal.
Yeah. Good morning. Assistant Attorney General Brett Terry on behalf of the Commissioner of Human Services. So to address appellant's argument, most of it is outside of the scope of these proceedings. These proceedings, or the judicial appeal panel, by statutory definition, is there simply to decide whether Mr. Weber meets various forms of reduction in custody. As appellant said, his argument really isn't focused on provisional discharge and discharge, and in fact, he's essentially waived that he meets those criteria. His briefs didn't address that at all, simply said that if he's not appropriate for transfer, that he is should otherwise then be provisionally discharged or discharged, but that can be found nowhere in the statutory factors for either one of those. To the extent that Mr. Weber is arguing that transfer is appropriate and it's appropriate for this court to determine, he's asking this court to simply reweigh the evidence. He keeps talking about how little weight should be given to the commissioner's witnesses, in this case, the clinical leadership testimony and reports of Peter Puffer and the DHS risk assessor, Dr. Tippett. I'd like to address one thing he said, that the judicial appeal panel gave him a presumption of competency. Nowhere in the order does it give him that presumption. The judicial appeal panel weighed the evidence and sided with Mr. Weber not meeting these statutory factors. And in fact, the evidence, as this court pointed out, in support of Mr. Weber was a close call from Dr. Gierock. And when you look at Dr. Gierock's report and read his testimony, you'll see that Dr. Gierock identified essentially the same remaining treatment needs that, you know, the commissioner's witnesses did and that the court relied on. Mr. Weber has deficiencies related to his sexual deviancy, his problem solving, and self-monitoring. Dr. Gierock's testimony indicated that that relates directly to his recidivism and is essentially the basis for his commitment.
Well, appellant argues that the recitation of the remaining treatment needs became, in his case, an unexamined formula by which searching review of the grant of petition was avoided. How do you respond to that?
Appellant also doesn't dispute the findings of fact. The court applied those findings of fact to the transfer factors and correctly found that Mr. Weber didn't meet his burden by preponderance of the evidence to show that transfer was appropriate. The argument that somehow the program should only be a 32-month program, it flies directly in the fact that Mr. Weber's indeterminately committed. This is a program, Mr. Weber's argued that he's not challenging the constitutionality of it and that he's essentially waived it because he didn't bring it down below, and yet he comes back to the duration of the program. Well, this is a program that has been found to be constitutional in every court where it's been challenged. So there really is no argument that the panel didn't consider the factors here. Mr. Weber simply is disputing the weight that the panel gave certain factors and opinions, and that's not appropriate for overturning the decision to deny transfer. There was talk, and it's not clear exactly to the commissioner as to what the argument surrounding Travis is. It seems to be that there's some, as the program as applied to Mr. Weber is somehow violating his rights. But Travis didn't hold that. It didn't look to that. It's not a strict scrutiny analysis. It's simply, you know, is there a reasonable relationship to his initial commitment? It's the discharge factors in light of Call v. Gomez. Also, looking back at what Dr. Gierock said, you know, the actuarial tools and everything were essentially the same as scored by Dr. Tippett. I'll come back to this point because it's the only point that Mr. Weber makes that's actually before this court, is he's simply asking you to reweigh the evidence. He doesn't like how the judicial appeal panel ruled. The SRB recommendation is neither here nor there. That's not evidence. That's just a recommendation from the panel that once someone petitions for review, you know, it's a de novo review at the judicial appeal panel, so no weight really should be given to the recommendation from the SRB. That's just not before this court and not evidence. I'd like to touch just briefly on another argument, the provisional discharge and discharge. As I stated earlier, Mr. Weber has waived those arguments that they meet the statutory criteria. But regardless, when you look at the evidence, even Dr. Gierock, who Mr. Weber called, said he is not someone who is in a position for outpatient treatment. His provisional discharge plan doesn't provide adequate safety or reasonable adjustment to open society. There's no argument before this panel that provisional discharge or discharge is appropriate, and we'd ask that that be affirmed as well. Unless this panel has any more questions, the commissioner will rest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hager?
Just briefly, thank you. There has been actually one court that applying strict scrutiny found this program to be unconstitutional. Of course, that was overruled in the Eighth Circuit. But there were ample findings, and under the strict scrutiny standard, certainly was met. When we quote Justice Blackmun in a concurrence, we're just stating a principle that we think this court could benefit by, and that is that treatment, if it can help, should be provided. We think that that points to a line of demarcation where, if you look at Moose Lake and what's happening there, treatment is parceled out, it's rationed out, it's not particularly a system where everyone gets provided all the treatment possible. In fact, as an inpatient treatment program, it has hours that are pretty much like outpatient treatment. You might be in groups twice a week, as if you were an outpatient, but then they consider being there inpatient as a treatment milieu, and that treatment milieu has not been effective. Our point with Weber is that by denying him access to CPS, this is just one more aspect of treatment being prevented, but if it would be helpful. Now, of course, the court gets to determine, the panel gets to determine whether it would be helpful or not, and they determined it wouldn't be helpful at this point. But there's just a much larger problem because there's so many hundreds of people, and it becomes, it's not like it used to be in the old days with 30 or 40 people. It's 700, and now it becomes there's a bottleneck. The quote from Justice Wall we wanted to get at when we were reviewing the when they were reviewing constitutionality, and Justice Wall and Blodgett in her dissent. So it was I believe it was a 4-3 decision. One justice tipped whether this was even found to be constitutional by Minnesota courts. And she said there's an analogy being used for the sexually dangerous, or in that era I think it was sexual psychopaths. It's an analogy to the mentally ill and dangerous. The mentally ill and dangerous are treated by medication. And those symptoms can be resolved by medication, and suddenly they're no longer dangerous. They may continue to have the mental illness, but they could be released into society. Well, we don't have medications in this situation with the sex offenders. We have treatment, and it's much more subjective, and the institution doesn't necessarily have the kind of criteria that you have in the mentally ill and dangerous situation where you have remission. So the person committed as a psychopathic personality, as a practical matter, has no such opportunity to show that. And that's where this system, I think, is shown to fail, the phase 1, 2, and 3 system. And going through those hoops does not necessarily accurately characterize whether a person, by an independent examiner, just looking at their treatment and whether they could be safe. I think we've put those glasses on that have colored a clear view of whether somebody is permitted to progress in treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted, and we'll have our decision out within the 90 days.